another consequence of this industrialized worship is we've idolized worship leaders and had these celebrity worship leaders, but we've also idolized the song, the anthem, and it's all about writing the big song and the song that works. And if you're the songwriter, then you're credible. And we put so much emphasis on the song when it's the worship. It's just the springboard for our outpouring.
Hey, it's Nikki Fletcher. Welcome to the Art of Worship podcast. These conversations are designed to help strengthen you as a worship leader in the context of your local church.
Welcome to the Art of Worship podcast. My name's Craig. I'm here with my very good friend, Nikki Fletcher, down in Sydney. How are you, Nikki?
I'm good today,
Are you feeling okay about our last podcast,
Nikki? I thought you were going to say, are you feeling Pentecostal? Are you feeling Anglican? Are you feeling...
Which one are you tonight?
Yeah, you were texting me the other day and you said, is this Pentecostal, Nikki, or is this Anglican,
That's true,
Nikki?
I did. I actually said that.
Yeah.
I said, which one am I talking to? I want to speak to Anglican Nikki for a second.
I'm feeling really good. I loved our last conversation. We got a lot of interesting feedback, and I think the whole point of the conversation was to... wrestle through our understanding, our ideas, and not to just agree with one another and pat each other on our backs, but to sort of wrestle with our irritations.
Seriously, these are the questions that people are asking us. So let's ask the questions and have a conversation about it. And that gives other people permission to have that same conversation as well.
That's right.
But just so that we could spread out the heat, we've invited a very good friend of yours into this conversation. Do you want to introduce to our listeners who that is?
Today we've got our guest host, Tom Reed. Say hi, Tom.
Yes. Hello.
Hey. Tom is, he's in Oxford, which is an amazing city actually in the UK.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you tell us about Oxford. What's so amazing about Oxford? Anyone in academia would know Oxford, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's the university is the main talking point of Oxford, and obviously it's huge, it's well known, the whole city revolves around it. But actually, from a Christian point of view, there's a really strong heritage and history of Christian, writers, like people like C.S. Lewis, but even going back to, Cranmer and all that kind of stuff. And we actually at our church just celebrated 1,000 years of worship on that site.
You're kidding.
Yeah, the history goes back. Way
a thousand back. Years at St. Aldate's. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't always St. Aldate's. It's 1,000 years of Christian worship on that site. So obviously it's gone through changes as it's over those years, but yeah, it's still pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Tom and I met through Worship Central. You were in the UK and I was in London and you were...
I was in Hong Kong.
Sorry. Hong Kong. You were in Hong Kong. Yeah. I was in the UK. And we collaborated on some conferences and tours and things like that.
Yeah.
But since then you and your family have moved to the UK and you've been there how many years now?
Coming up on 7 years, which is scary because it just goes so fast.
Yeah. That's about the same time I moved back to Australia. You moved to the UK. And Tom's been leading worship in St. Aldate's, and he's also an artist and producer. So you can find all your music online and stuff, can't you?
That's right, yeah. Just the usual places.
Yes.
He's so a good. These two catching up. Yeah. I haven't caught up for a while. Hey, we actually finished our last podcast by saying that we were actually going to talk about this question that people sent through, specifically to you, Nikki, and they ask you the question, should we boycott Bethel? And we're like, what? Bethel? What's that all about? Why are you asking that question?
Yeah.
And so then we did some research and all the rest of it. And it's one of many conversations that we'd like to have on this particular podcast. And so I guess the question is why? Why are they asking the question? What is that all about? And why is the target on Bethel? They have some pretty amazing worship songs, do they not?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bethel has become one of the main providers of songs that we sing in church, probably, what, over the last 5 to 7 years? It's a rather new phenomenon, I think. Mm. So actually, Tom, this is something that you've been thinking. Let me just throw it straight to you, okay?
I don't know. What do you reckon, Tom?
You can get it started. I've heard a few rumbles around the place about should we sing Bethel from different churches or worship leaders.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
Well, I think you can look at Bethel specifically, or you can ask the bigger question is, should we not sing songs from any type of church or that we have a disagreement with, and, you know, or should we, how much are we considering where our songs come from? And I think the reason Bethel comes up a lot is because for many people, their theology in particular is pretty questionable. And some people love it. A lot of people think it's way out there. And so I think it's worth asking the question of, you know, how much does, you know, can we divorce songs from the songwriters? And, you know, I think, go on.
I was just going to say, or can you divorce songs from preachers? Probably more.
Yeah.
Would be even more like. Because that's kind of seems to be where some of the tension is, right?
Yeah.
The question is, even if a song is theologically sound and profound, the royalties, the finances that come from those songs go to support a ministry that may or may not be consistent with the theology of the church that's singing it. So should you therefore stop singing it?
Yeah. I think, so just to give you guys a bit of background, probably about 2 years ago, I made a personal decision, I suppose you'd say, that I wasn't going to lead Bethel songs anymore, unless I was like, you know, obviously if a church leader said, oh, can we lead this song, then I would lead it. But if where the choice is mine to choose the songs, I wasn't going to choose songs from them. And there isn't any one reason particularly why. I think it's the more that I learn about Bethel, the more that I hear, just even things like interacting with the leadership on social media, just really made me feel personally like I didn't want to be contributing to what I feel like they're doing as a ministry and as a church. And I don't like to use the word boycott, though, because it's not something that I'm trying to get other people to do. So I'm not out here waving a flag going, hey, everyone should not sing these songs. Everyone should boycott and stop singing this. For me, it's just a personal, like, I think everyone needs to lead with integrity. And so for me, with it just became an integrity issue where I felt like I couldn't lead those songs with good faith and integrity anymore. And if the choice was mine, then I think there are way better songs, or no, I shouldn't say way better songs. I think there are other songs, because I do think Bethel songs are really good, which has made the decision even harder because they're really good and they're popular as well. And people know them and love them. But there are other songs out there that I can lead. So if I don't need to lead them and it's causing a conflict, an inner conflict with me, then why do I need to lead them?
And has that been received with your leadership within your team or within your church? Has anyone even noticed, or is it a private thing?
Yeah, it's not a public thing. So I didn't, you know, make an announcement. I didn't. It's been a private thing. potentially, if any of my church leaders are listening to this, this might be the first time they've ever heard that. So it hasn't really been a problem at all for me. You know, but I know that it could be a problem for other people who go to a church where they're told what songs they should lead, or they're strongly encouraged to lead certain songs, where I'm fortunate that in my church, that's not the case. We kind of have, I wouldn't say free rein, but we are responsible for choosing the songs that we sing at the church, and no one's saying you have to do this song, you have to do that song kind of thing.
So is it the theology of the song or the theology of the church, or is it not about theology at all? Or
I think it comes down to three things for me. One is I do think the theology and many parts of it are a bit out there, you know, and not to the point,
yeah,
like to the point where I find it concerning. Because I have to preface it by saying, you're never going to agree with everyone's theology, you know. And if that's the case, if we can only sing songs that from people that we agree with 100% on everything, then you're never going to lead a song again, you know, because you're never going to agree 100%. Mm. So I feel like their theology, particularly in the area of healing and the emphasis that's placed on that and in the terms of, you know, there's... I don't know how far you want to go down this route of explaining. I'm not a theologian, so, you know, it's like...
We've put him in the hot seat,
you
Nikki. Know,
you can get the hate mail, anything. Not me. Yeah.
But I'll just say, it's like you're squirming.
I'll just say off the top, there's three things. One is the theology. Yeah. The second thing is the kind of the ideologies of the church, you know. And thirdly, which ties into that, is their political alignment and... I know this is also going to probably get me in hot water, but their alignment with Trump, I find to be particularly troubling. Mm. You know, I think it's one thing for Christians to feel like they have no other choice. Okay, Trump feels like is the best option. But to come out batting for him and supporting him and saying that he's the best Christian choice, that really, really deeply disturbs me. And so that... potentially is more of a driver for me than the theological side is that kind of
Wow.
So those are sort of the things that have sat with me.
Interesting.
It's interesting because you said it was 2 years ago that you decided to do this, and so you're kind of a little bit ahead of the game in that everything's inflamed at the moment and a lot of people are jumping on a lot of bandwagons and, you know, searching for YouTube videos of heretics and blah, 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 and there's a lot of stuff out there, but this is something that you've thought through over a number of years and are coming to quite strong convictions based on your own personal integrity before God, which I think regardless of whether we would take the same position or agree with you, that's just a really powerful example of being a leader and standing for something. Craig, what do you think?
Oh, there's so many things. I mean, we talk to our Worship Academy students about this idea of not singing somebody else's journey. And often, and we can talk about this a lot later around globalization and industrialization, all these like... words that you're talking a lot about lately, Nikki, but we hear a CCLI top 25 song and it came out 8 days ago. And if you want to be on the bandwagon, you've kind of got to sing it. And all of a sudden you find yourself singing a song that's you're singing because it's popular and it sounds good rather than it reflects the journey of your church. I think one of the things that we need to be doing as worship leaders is leading our local congregations and giving them words to the utterances of the corporate heart, the utterance of the corporate sigh, longings, all the rest of it. And that's going to be different in different locations. So we do run the risk of just by adopting, you know, the songs that have been written out of literally a handful of churches in Nashville. And all of a sudden we're singing a journey that's not ours. There are types of songs that are timeless and that they cross borders and they cross barriers and boundaries and all that type of things, which are songs of adoration, songs that declare, the truth of Christ and the gospel story in all its glory. But then there are a lot of songs, I would say the majority of songs that are coming out now, that are circumstantial, that are devotional narratives, that are this type of thing that puts you in a time and place where either corporately or individually you've experienced something. And because of the popularity of the church, these songs are being grabbed a hold of in local churches all around the world and sung without really the consideration of whether or not this is actually reflective of the journey that we're on. So that would be one thing that I would say about, blindly singing songs from other churches. The theology thing is an interesting one, because I guess that there's two arguments to it. You could say, well, if you disagree with any theology by anyone, then you pretty much can only sing your own church's songs. So do you disqualify people like that, or only the ones that trouble you a lot? What if, like, for example, we sing a song at our church, Goodness of God, which is written by some of the Bethel crew and I believe some of the Hillsong crew.
There's quite a lot of writers on it. Yeah, I'm not sure. But yeah.
The point being, they're not all out of the same church. So what if some of the writers are out of a church that you do agree with? You know, do you not sing that song as well? You know, I just wonder whether it's a slippery slope where you just get to the point where you're just not singing anybody's songs because you don't agree with them.
Can I use an illustration? So also about 2 years ago, which is just happened to coincide with the Bell thing, I stopped drinking cow's milk and I started drinking oat milk. Yeah. I find it really interesting. Like, I'm not a vegan. And my whole life have drunk cow's milk. You know, pretty much like I think most of us in Western society, we have grown up drinking cow's milk and we drink it without really thinking about it. It's just what we've done. We've been told it's good. And over the last couple of years, I started, looking at how milk's made, looking at the conditions and blah, blah, all that kind of stuff. And also realizing that you don't need to drink cow's milk. There's other milk alternatives out there. So again, I'm not trying to convince anyone. Like, I'm not standing on a hill going, hey, no one should drink cow's milk. But what has happened to me is that I've questioned, why do we drink milk from another animal? It's kind of a weird thing. But for me, I think of it kind of in the similar way. I think a lot of us we sing songs in our churches without really thinking about where they've come from, just because that's what we've done, you know. And then I feel like where a lot of people are now is we're starting to realize, like, we're starting to look at some of the songs and go, oh, hang on a minute, or look at some of the places where the songs have come from and go, hang on a minute, just because we've always done this, is it the best thing, you know? And I actually, my stomach doesn't agree with cow's milk, so switching to oat milk has really physically had a good benefit on me, you know. So I don't know if that's a good example or a bad example, but I just found it, like, you know, it's one of those things where it's about questioning what we've always done or the source of where things are coming from and thinking that through, rather than just going, you know. I've had so many people say to me, like, well, why, you know, what's wrong with cow's milk? And I'm like, well, potentially nothing.
Just doesn't agree with me.
Potentially lots of things, depending on how you look at it, or even if you look at it, or if you want to go into it. Do you know what I mean? And I think worship's the same way. I think you could say, what's wrong with Bethel songs? And actually, I think their songs are really good. I think I don't disagree with the theology in any Bethel song, really. So it depends how much you want to really look at it. For some people, it's not a problem. For other people, it might be a problem.
Mm. Yeah.
There's that song Forever, which I know that our church belted out for a few years.
Yeah.
Which is just like the gospel narrative. It's beautiful poetry and like a really great declaration of the gospel story. And, you know, the argument is that ultimately, you know, are we supporting a ministry that we don't agree with, which is representing Jesus in a way that's inconsistent with our understanding of who he is and our relationship, right? That's ultimately the question. So then, Nikki, you and I were talking via text and you were saying song by song basis. Do you still hold that view?
Well, my general method at this point in time is I take each song on its own merit. But I do consider a few things. Obviously, as we talked last week, you know, just thinking through the theology and also, you know, it's not just the theology, it's also the lens that you are, you know, that it's kind of that you're singing it through and all that sort of stuff. As far as what church it's come from, I've never really looked too much into the writers or the churches until the last couple of years, but not because so much for like theological or political reasons or anything like that, more because of the globalized, industrialized, homogenized, monopolized state of worship music.
Yeah.
And as a worship leader, songwriter, creative person that's always had a song to bring myself to the table, to my local church, whatever church or ministry I've been part of, there's always been a song in me for those people and for that moment. And just over the last, say, 3 to 5 years in particular, I feel like it's really accelerated the industrialization of worship music, the instantaneousness of downloading those songs from YouTube, downloading your set from CCLI. And
what do you mean by industrialization?
I think the organic nature of music in the church has retracted because the industry has gotten bigger and more dominant and more accessible and more marketed and more available. And that's not all bad. Like there's been a lot of good things about that. So maybe we can talk about that. But I feel like the balance has gone so off that someone like me, who's a local church songwriter, who was always confident writing songs, who was always confident bringing songs to the table, has essentially lost their voice. And I've seen this with a lot of friends because we've got the best songs in the world downloaded instantaneously from the churches that are writing them, or the people, the artists, the industry. So the concern for me is that it's kind of what you were saying, Craig, about like, are we singing our own journey? I feel like number one, the homogenization is really worrying. Like it doesn't matter what church I go into, and I lead in a lot of different types of churches, like Anglican churches, Pentecostal in Australia. Everyone's singing the same songs. Everyone's singing the same thing. Everyone looks the same. Everyone's wearing the same outfit. Everyone's got the same ad libs. We're all executing the same parts. And, you know, I'm generalizing, but it's just what I've observed, that that's basically what I'm seeing. So the homogenization, and that concerns me because I just believe that God's church is diverse. It's as he's created us all equal but different, and we've got different tongues and different sounds and different journeys and different stories and different suffering. And I'm not hearing any of that come through. So that's concerning. Secondly is the lack of the local song. I'm not hearing the local songs, and maybe that's my own fault. Maybe I've not tried hard enough. But you know, I think there's been a lot of confidence lost in the local church worship leader that goes, oh, I can never write a, like, what's it? Graves and Gardens is the latest song that's come out. I mean, it was probably released 2 weeks ago, and now every church is singing it in the world, you know, and when I sit down and write a song, I'm a little bit like, oh, it's never going to be good enough. It's never going to be produced enough. Oh, I may as well. I've got Graves and Garden, and I may as well just do that. I'll just do that. And then, you know, so we've lost a bit of our voice, a bit of our confidence. And I think where we used to take risks 10, 15 years ago and go, hey, let's just try it and see if the church wants to sing it. These are our people. These are our community. We maybe aren't taking the risks anymore. because we have this expectation of worship to be like this, because this is what the industry is producing for us. Yeah.
Mm. And also, Nikki, your songs aren't on multi-tracks, so how could we?
What do you mean?
How could we play them? You don't. There you go. Nikki's been out of the game for a little while now.
What do you mean? I lead worship all the time, but not to tracks.
No. Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Oh, show my age.
That's fine.
We're trying to start multi-tracks at our church, and it's a journey.
Do you mean like having stems?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can't do the local song because you don't have stems and you can't put in your system and then people can't stay to a click. Yeah. You know, it's a bit of a...
Jokes aside, though, I think...
Yeah, jokes aside.
I think that is a really big thing about when Nikki talks about the industrialization of worship. I think, you know, and this isn't a dig at multi-tracks or any of that kind of stuff. I think that what they're trying to do is resource the church, but it's a great example of how worship has been industrialized, you know, that now we can go on, we don't even need to be able to play instruments. We can go online and download all the stems and play those songs like as they are on the recording in our churches. Now, some people might think that's a good thing. Some people might think that's a bad thing, but it is an indication of where we're at right now in terms of, you know, especially if you've got a church that wants you and the pressure is you've got to sound like Elevation, but you can't sound like Elevation because you just don't have the team to do it. Well, you can't now download
that's okay. A bass player can mime, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And we can just turn the track up.
So it's basically a backing track.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just turn up the instruments that you don't have.
And for me, like, I guess my philosophy as a worship leader, I very much believe in context. And I believe in the people in the room and community and God using leaders in their context to release worship in the people in front of them. And so my worry about us having a downloadable worship set and a downloadable worship band essentially behind us is we're not learning to do it ourselves, to lead the worship and release the worship and write the worship, but also we're not raising up anyone else to do it. We're not empowering other people to go, hey, you know what? You just need to be able to learn how to play the piano or learn how to play a guitar. You got to sing well and you got to get up there with some authority, seek God, and like sing out a song or sing a new song. You know, I mean, I think back to when I first started leading worship and I was a songwriter, singer-songwriter, and someone literally just handed me a guitar and said, get up and sing a song. I was like, I don't know any church songs. They were like, well, write some. So I literally sat down and wrote a bunch of church songs and got up at youth. And that, like, I knew nothing about it, but I was forced to write songs. I was forced to learn how to lead people in the room. Whereas now it's like, okay, we learn how to lead by watching YouTube and then we download our stems and then we get up and, you know, that's why everyone's sounding the same and looking the same. And,
Now the argument, sorry, Tom, you go.
I was just going to say another question to ask yourself is how would you feel if you're pastor or vicar only ever preach sermons from Stephen Furtick or Brian Houston or
get your own material, mate.
Do you know what I mean? Like, would we accept that? Would we be happy with the pastor at our local church just preaching other people's sermons?
Interesting.
Well, I wouldn't because they wouldn't do it as well. I may as well just listen. And this is what my husband said to me the other day. He's like, I may as well just listen to Brian Houston on a podcast or on his, you know, I may as well just download it, listen to it in my in-ears. I don't need someone to reproduce it badly on a Sunday. I need them to tell their own story, you know, and bring their own revelation. And it's the same with music. There's no point in me like watching Gretzinger and being like, okay, I'm going to sing her song and do her thing and get up at Avalon in this community center and shake my head around and reproduce that. But really badly. Like, I'm not going to do a good job of that. So it's the reproduce, like, it's the copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. Whenever we're not learning authentic expression of worship, are we?
Now,
People are going to hate me for saying that. Argument.
No. This is good. Let me throw some opposition into the mix. Like the counter argument would be that for the first time in history, the global church has been able to sing as one voice. Mm. Like that would be a counter argument for the benefits of.
Nikki. Sorry.
We're all going to be singing the same song in heaven. Like, and this is just a snapshot. I mean,
are we?
Here's it. I don't know. Like, we're all gathering around the glassy sea singing the same song. Are we, no?
I don't know. Like, literally the same song.
Surely it's in one of those.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, maybe. Are we all singing the same song in heaven together? Anyway, the point might be that this is a great thing for the church. And an example would be at the start of COVID when the blessing got covered by every country in the world. And by the time, like the UK one was excellent, and go, oh, wow, that was quite powerful. And then when every country released theirs with varying degrees of execution, it's like, oh, okay. You know, it kind of lost its.
Yeah. I have a thought on this.
Hit us.
I mean, I think it was, in one sense, it was amazing. But did you guys ever see the Irish blessing?
I don't think I did.
That's the best one that I've seen. And everyone should go on YouTube and look for the Irish blessing. It's honestly, it's incredible. But the thing that I thought that was most powerful about it is that they sung an Irish song. They sung Be Thou My Vision, which is an Irish hymn. And as amazing as the blessing was.
So it wasn't the blessing?
No, they didn't sing the blessing song.
Right. Oh. They sang
Be Thou My Vision.
Be Thou My Vision.
Which is an Irish song. And it was full of like Irish culture. There was like Irish dancing in it and Irish instruments and stuff like that. Honestly, it blew me away. And as much as I loved the heart of the UK blessing and all the other things, if you watch like the UK blessing versus the Irish blessing, it's kind of like, it's just totally different. You know, the UK one, we're all kind of, it's so homogenized. Whereas if you watch the Irish one, it's so varied and cultured and rich. And, you know, like I say, I think they were both amazing. And I think it was a really powerful statement. But I do feel like what was amazing about that the Irish version was that they sang an Irish song. And I think that that's kind of, there is power in singing songs that are, you know, special to your culture or your region. You know, I think about another analogy is like the news. You know, when we watch the news, normally when you turn on the news, you'll get world news, then you'll get regional news, and then you'll get your local news. But imagine if you just turn on the news and the only thing you ever got was world news. Like you never heard anything that was in relation to where you are, your own country, and no local news. Do you know what I mean? And I think that those two aspects are really important. And I feel like kind of in the church and in worship, we're getting a lot of the global news. We're getting the big global songs, but we're not really getting much regional or local stuff happening, you know, in terms of our worship.
Mm. And I think there's definitely a place for the produced song, the produced music that sounds great, that, you know, I don't want to listen to Joe Bloggs down from the church down the road in my car when I'm driving in my car and singing a little slightly out of tune and the drums a little bit out of time. Like I want really well produced music. And in that context, and then also the other thing is we want those amazing global songs that carry God's heart for that moment. We want access to them. And it's great for churches that don't have songwriters, that don't have big worship teams, and they can access a song and they can do a simple version of it. And all those resources are great. But like you said, if we're just turning into Hillsong cover bands, like every church has just got a Hillsong cover band, I just feel like it's not the true expression of who God's created us to be, and we're missing out on so much of Him, of His glory, and enjoying who He is. And also it's just, it's become quite one-dimensional as well. And I think this is because of social media and Instagram and, you know, the algorithms just feed what works really fast. And so we're consuming more and more of the same thing. But it's like, if you're not under 30 and you don't look a certain way and you don't have a certain type of expression or passion, if your songs don't hit that drum build by the first 30 seconds, you know, and that's it, it's one dimension, and it is a dimension, and it is a great dimension that we all love at points, but it gets very boring very quickly and very tiring. What about any worship leader that's over 40? Like, are they allowed to lead worship at church?
Represent.
I'm nearly there, guys. Yeah. Nearly there.
Nearly there.
What about a worship leader that's overweight? Are they allowed to worship?
We're going to put our hands up now, Tom.
Craig's got his hand up now. You know, what about a song that has more space and doesn't have a drum build all the way through? Like,
I was talking to a friend today, actually a worship leader friend, and we had lunch, and he was asking me about, have I heard this new worship album? Have I heard this new worship album or whatever? And then he brought up Phil Wickham's new song, Battle Belongs, which I thought that you would enjoy, Nikki. But anyway, we'll just like set that aside. Anyway, Battle Belongs, and he goes, what do you think of it? And I said, I think, you know, and this is me, first listen, I said, I think the chorus is really catchy. The production is next level, like sounds amazing in my ears. And all the rest of it, I said, it feels a little Nashville cookie cutter. Sorry. Like, that was kind of like, I said, it feels a little Nashville cookie cutter. And he said, I've heard that phrase like 6 times this week from other worship leaders. That phrase, I've never, like, he just goes Nashville cookie cutter. It's like, it's kind of like sort of like a sausage machine of like churning out predictable chord progressions with, you know, the standard arrangement. You could almost have a drop-down menu in Logic for the way that it's kind of mapped out. Now, I actually don't mean any disrespect, but to your point of being a bit more homogenized and boring, is that that's kind of what you're getting at, right, Nikki? It's just this, it sounds the same.
Yeah, I guess like it's sonically, but also visually as well. You know, I think now because we're all like our eyeballs are on visual content all day, we're being conditioned to experience like this is what worship is. Like it's this type of person on stage. Like, you know, even the way people move. And I think it's we've always had an element of that. Like when I was young learning to worship lead, Darlene Check was like the first big worship leader, and you'd see a DVD on something somewhere, but we didn't have access to the constant content. So we weren't seeing it all the time. Or you go to a conference, you go to a big conference and you'd see her worship lead and she'd be doing this with her hand. And then, you know, the worship leaders that were aspiring would do the same kind of movement. So there's always kind of like, I think for the last 20 years, 25 years, we've had an element of that, but it's just been so dominated and accelerated, because we're on content all day. And we're consuming it, and then we don't even know that we're reproducing something. And I guess we're maybe losing that authenticity and that integrity. And maybe we can. And I don't want this to be a bashing thing, because, like, for Elevation Church, like I just watched their latest video over the last couple of days, and took it in, and I was like, okay, for them, for those people in that room, in that context, that's authentic. That's that experience for them, and it's just been captured. It's been produced really well. But when I am here in Avalon with my kids and my piano, and like I'm 39 years old and I lead worship on a Sunday in a community center with no band, that's my authentic experience. Yeah. And I want to learn how to worship and how to lead others in worship authentically so that God can actually do something in my context.
Yeah.
And maybe I can use some of those songs on occasion and they add to what God's doing here. But I would love for God to use us here And like, I mean, Tom, you've got a lot to say about this. I'd love to rediscover that moving forward. I'd love to rediscover it, and I'd love to teach it to other people. And that authentic expression, not to come out of a YouTube video that has inspired me, although that's not bad, but I would love it to come out of my relationship with Christ, out of discipleship, out of being in the Word, out of community, out of what God's doing amongst us and in my world. And maybe the songs that I write or we write don't go out to the global church. Maybe they're not for the global church. Maybe not. They're not meant to be produced or whatever. Maybe they are just for my little local church.
Yeah.
So can we maybe talk a bit about that? Because I know you've got some thoughts. And also you've been doing this, haven't you?
Yeah.
You've been quite on it with this.
Yeah. I think, you know, when we look at the globalization and industrialization of worship, I think one of the huge downsides, which you've already mentioned, is that the sources of songs gets really narrowed down. You know, like you said, we're sort of singing songs from, you know, six or seven main churches. And the downside of that is that we've been talking about, the regional voice or the local voice gets lost. And one of the things that I've noticed in the UK in the last, well, since I've been here, just looking at, again, at the CCLI charts, and I know you've done a similar thing, looking at what are the top 25 songs that are being sung in UK churches right now. And the majority of songs in the top 25 are not written by British worship leaders or British songwriters. They're predominantly written by Americans or Australians. And so that in itself is kind of interesting. And then of the songs that are being sung that are British songs, none of them have been written in the last 10 years. They're all been written, they're all sort of like 15 or 20 years old songs. And so going back to the news example, it's like imagine if you turn on the news and you got like up-to-date global news, and then it's like, and here's some regional news from 15 years ago, you know? It's like, so we're kind of like, it's just become a real concern where it's like, in the UK particularly, and this is definitely a modern church sort of charismatic evangelical type of problem. I imagine in a lot of the more traditional churches, they're singing a lot of British songs, but again, there'll be hymns and older songs, sort of 20, perhaps 30 years old. But particularly in the modern church and the churches that are particularly sort of growing at a fast rate, that British voice in our songs is almost non-existent now. And I don't think it's definitely not happened intentionally. It's a byproduct of what we've been talking about, of this sort of like celebrity worship world that we live in, where everyone wants to be singing the latest and greatest song that's come out. And, you know, obviously I sing a lot of Hillsong songs myself. And the reason why I sing a lot of them is because they're just brilliant songs. Like, I think Hillsong are really good at writing worship songs, and they really serve the church well. So this it's not a thing of like, we shouldn't be singing these songs from around the world. It's more a case of, have we got the balance right? And I think that right now the balance is just way off. And I'm sure it's not just the UK that are experiencing this. And I feel like we need to do something to get that balance back, where the regional and the local voice of the church is being represented in our worship.
And what's your project, Tom? Like, what's the project that you're working on to help make that a reality?
So I've had so many conversations with people about this, and everyone's like, yeah, this is a real problem. What can we do about it? You know, there's no people sing the songs that they sing. And a lot of people are also like, oh, well, we sing a lot of our own local songs in our church. That's our solution, is we can sing our own songs if we've written them in our own churches, which I think is great. Like, that's awesome. But I think that we need a concerted effort among worship leaders, the people that are choosing songs in church, to say, this is important. And the way that this is going to happen is if we kind of like join together to champion and promote each other's songs. And to, because I think what I've seen in the UK specifically is that it's not that there aren't a lot of people writing new songs. There are a lot of people, probably more than ever, people are writing worship songs in the UK. There's more worship songs being written than there ever before. I'm sure of that. But what is not happening is we're not singing each other's songs. We're either singing our own songs or we're singing the top six churches songs, you know, the whatever's on the top 25 CCLI. And I think it's that middle ground, that key to changing it is for us to be willing to sing each other's songs. So this is the project that I'm working on. It's basically a community where we curate together a song list of UK written worship songs. And every month a new song is added to that. So the list will grow and grow and grow. The idea is simple. Anyone who believes that this is something they want to be a part of and it's an important thing, they kind of join this community and they make a pledge that's like, okay, every time I lead worship, I'm going to choose one UK written song from this song list that we have and include that in my set list alongside all the other songs. And the idea is to just kind of work together, because there is something about the momentum of songs. Like you look at Waymaker over the last couple of years, and it's interesting because that song's actually been around for a while, but then Leland did a version of it, you know, and it suddenly took off. And there's probably a whole nother conversation there for a different podcast about why it took a white man singing a song from a black woman for it to take off around the world. But anyway, let's not get into that. But, you know, I think that song has got a momentum in the church right now, which has taken it off. And it's impacting the church in the way that it should. And I think the problem that we find in the UK right now is there are lots of really good songs, but none of them get the momentum that's needed to actually really kind of have an impact on the church in the UK. Because that momentum is always sort of pushed out in favor of the latest big song from a well-known church or worship leader. So it's kind of...
But why is it so important that local cultures have their own voice? Why is that such a passion for you? Where's the injustice?
When you say local, do you mean like...
Well, UK, so...
Yeah, so it's a national, like...
Yeah,
something's going on in the UK, not just like in...
Yeah.
In this suburb or in Oxford or in this, you know.
I want to be careful about it because I don't want this to sound nationalist, you know, especially in the climate that we live in right now. I think a good example is something that you guys have already picked up on in a previous podcast and a little bit today is we've noticed with a lot of American songs, there's this emphasis on battles and warfare, and that reflects the American culture. That's a huge part of their culture, this idea of warfare, you know, the culture wars and physical wars. And it's just, it's in their vocabulary, it's in their lifestyle, and that comes through in their songs. And I always feel a bit uncomfortable in the UK when we sing stuff that's heavily focused on that, because that's not as much the culture here. So we're kind of importing that culture from America into our churches and into our worship. Now, there can be good things that are important and bad things that are imported, but I think where the regional is important, or the, you know, the country, is that cultural aspect, where there are things that I think are unique to what is happening in the church in the UK, not just at a local level, but at a national level, that is important to the church and can be articulated in our songs and in our worship. And I think that that's a missing part of the puzzle.
Yeah, do you think in the last 5 years there's been any songs that are an example of that in the UK?
Of what example of what, sorry?
Could you name an example of a song that's sort of been born in the UK by the UK church, for the UK church, or is there a particular song
that reflects kind of the heart of what you're getting at?
No. I can't, but that doesn't mean there isn't. I just can't. I can't think of one. Yeah, I mean, the person that I think does a really good job of reflecting a lot of UK culture in his songs is Stuart Townend. You know, I think the way that he writes really resonates with a large percentage of the UK population, like church population, because he's sort of hymnal, which obviously still is big here, but he's also sort of modern, and he's able to weave those two together really well. And I can't think, the thing with Stuart Townend, and I love him and I love his songs, but he's, you know, he's, like I say, most of the songs, those songs are sort of 25, 30 years old, maybe not that far, 10, 15, 20 years old.
Christ Alone, I think, was 2007.
Yeah. That would have been. And the most recent.
How Deep the Father's Love?
That was, I've researched this. Yeah. So the only song that was written in the last 10 years that is kind of heavily featured in the CCLA charts for the UK is 10,000 Reasons, which was 2011. Yeah. So that's almost 10 years anyway. So yeah, I can't really think of an example of a song that has really taken off across the UK that is feels very like authentic to the UK. When I think that's really sad. You know, I don't think it's not because there isn't a song. I think, again, there's probably a local church somewhere in the UK that is singing a song that they've written, which is absolutely what we're talking about right now. But I've not heard it, and most other people and most other churches haven't heard it, because one, we're not necessarily looking for it. And two, we've got enough songs from everywhere else in the world to fill our set lists that everyone else is singing. So why do we need, you know, it's not getting, like I say, it's not getting the momentum. It's not getting the voice that it needs.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So like kind of our challenge is, I guess, to empower the local voice to write songs that express the voice of the local church.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would also say, I think one of the things that Hillsong has done historically very well is write language that is corporate language rather than individual language. Yeah. And I've always loved this idea that when the church gathers, we step out of our individuality and we step into corporateness at that point. What I think someone said that like a lot of our songs now, they pull us into corporateness, but give us an individual voice.
Yeah.
So we're singing individual worship to God in a gathered context now, whereas what used to happen a lot more was that when you gathered in the corporate context, you had a corporate voice. And that was kind of one of the unique things about gathering. So I don't know, just to throw that in there for something interesting. Can I share my concern around all this for young worship leaders that are coming through, local church worship leaders? I think that this generation is unique in that we've basically, what's being modeled to them as the epitome of worship leading is a packaged, commercialized product of worship that we see, you know, like you say, on YouTube and all the rest of it. And so we're modeling out, you know, people are modeling themselves on a Joel Houston or a Curry Job or, who knows, Corey Asbury, whoever, like they're modeling themselves on that, as kind of like the pinnacle, and that's what they want to be. I want to be a worship leader and all the rest of it. But the reality is that 99% of worship leading in the church is probably more what you describe, Nikki, like you're in a basketball court, in a local suburb with
a professional band,
a small congregation, no professional band,
no stage.
Limited musicians. And you're like, how do I lead people into intimacy with Christ in the corporate context in this space? And there's not a great deal of opportunity to see what that modeled well looks like.
And you know what's interesting, just as you're saying that, the songs that came out of the UK that formed contemporary worship came out of that space. They came out of the, hey, I know three chords and I'm just going to seek God, like the song Heart of Worship. And Here I Am to Worship. And before that, some of Martin Smith's Delirious songs came out of a bit of a like random church that was a bit like, out there, and they had this fiery conference and sung these songs that kind of like lit up the church in the UK, and eventually some of them pioneered worship globally. But that was there was no such thing as worship products then. Mm. And
yeah, you were also saying to me the other day that songs had to earn the right to go global back in the day, right? That's it's like,
well, it took how great, like 5 years for a song to
yeah, like
to
how great is our God got global because, you know, someone had to hand a CD to somebody else, you know. Mm. Now it's global 8 days after it's written.
Yeah.
And so it hasn't sort of earned its stripes.
Yeah.
And they you know, we get sick of them just as fast.
Yeah.
We're just like,
because we're looking so for the next song. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Whereas, you know, Here I Am to Worship, and there's a couple of others from 20 years ago, 25 years ago, that are still in the Australian top 25, which is interesting.
I think it's what's interesting as well is something that you touched on, Nikki, earlier, is just about the confidence as well as of worship leaders. And I think that, you know, I'd certainly know when I lead worship, I have a certain, I've sort of lost confidence in my own songs, or a song that's not, that's come from kind of an unknown source. Whereas I can take a song that I might think is fairly average from a really well-known worship leader and have more confidence singing that in my church than a brilliant song that is, I think is so good from someone that isn't established, you know, and I wouldn't have as much confidence leading that song. And I think that that's something that, I think that's something that's playing in as well to us as well right now, is that kind of like we've lost that confidence in songs, and it's just easier and safer to take the latest whatever song because we have a confidence in that. It's like, you know, maybe it's because people are more familiar with it, or you think they're going to be familiar with it because it's the latest thing. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And pastors would also put that, I would say senior pastors would put that pressure on the worship leaders to not be singing too many songs that people won't know in case they come into church, and like, you know, so kind of there is that pressure to do what the other churches are doing, because, you know, if there's a lack of familiarity, people will feel disengaged. So you go with the safe options all the time.
Yeah.
Like that's just it's a byproduct of, and it may be spoken or it may be unspoken. It's just kind of nature of the beast.
Yeah. You know who's really good at this? There are people, the Kiwis, the New Zealanders have always been really, really good at.
Is that because they don't have internet yet?
Maybe. Oh, Andy Campbell, I'm sorry. Buddy, haven't spoken in a while. No, but they're super like. There's so many talented worship leaders and creative people over there, but they have this confidence, and I haven't done any work with them for probably 4 years now, 5 years. So I can't wait to, you know, reconnect and see what's going on. But I hope they haven't lost that confidence, because they are so good at just singing their own song. And there's a few artists still like coming out of there. If you have to search for them, you know, they're not going to be pushed on you on YouTube. But just even there's a guy called Buzzy Baker who is a worship leader in Christchurch, I think, and he's a young guy, he's probably late 20s. He's in a vineyard church, and he's like a freak of nature when it comes to songwriting and musicianship. He was trained as a jazz musician, but like he gets on his guitar and he's so prolific. It's something to behold. But he's also a David. He's got this heart for worship where he can just literally sit and play all day. And he's put up, during COVID, he put up some things for his church, like in his lounge room, just playing and singing. And it's honestly, I'm trying to think if there's two worship music products that have blessed me in COVID, and one of them was Barzy. I was like, it's the only person that I've put on, and it's literally stopped me and made me sit down and just wait on God. And it's just him there on his guitar singing out his own song, singing out his own song, singing out. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, Lord, like, teach me to worship. Like, how do I do that? Somehow he's been kept from everything else and managed to maintain this authenticity and this confidence. And but I'd love to see a revival in that. And that even if, you know, we're only leading ourselves and our small communities, I mean, imagine if every church was doing that, had someone that could do that. Like, we'd probably have a revival in worship. So, yeah.
It's funny as well.
Good old Kiwis.
You just said something as well about, like, even if it's only just leading ourselves in worship. And I feel like... wouldn't it be great if we wouldn't it be great if we flipped the script? Like, wouldn't it be great if the ultimate aim of the next generation of worship leaders was if only I could lead in my local church, you know, not if only I could tour with my worship band. And do you know what I mean? I mean, I know it sounds it's such a, I don't know if that's a cliche or not, but I just think that that's a great example of we have to say things like, oh, you know, even if it's just your own church, that's still great. Like, why are we saying that? Like that? Like, that's the ultimate goal of leading worship, is to lead in your local context at your local church. And I think it's just things like that that we, you know, I feel are becoming more and more important as we, you know, I have the opportunity of mentoring a few younger worship leaders, and this is the kind of stuff that I'm trying to say to them, because I grew up as a young worship leader completely obsessed with making it as a worship leader. And, you know, I wouldn't have used this terminology at the time, but now I look back on it. Yeah, I was obsessed with becoming a celebrity worship leader. Like, that's what I wanted. And my local church was a stepping stone to get me to that place. And
that's godly fame. It's godly fame, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, it's just messed, you know, it's messed up. I mean, it really is. But I think that these are, you know, we've talked a lot about industrialized worship music, globalized industry. What does it mean? What are the consequences? And I think that that is a huge consequence that it's having on the church. And so to bring it full circle, because I don't want it to come across as negative, and this idea of, like, you know, we should stop singing these people's songs, blah, 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 blah. I think my aim in everything is to get people to think more about what they're doing and why they're doing it. I think if everyone would do that, I think if everyone would think more about the impact of the songs that they're singing, where they're leading, how they're leading, why they're leading, overall, we would start to get a much healthier landscape, both globally and regionally and locally, you know?
So
people can come to their own conclusions. Like, it doesn't have to be a boycott. You know, people can still sing Bethel songs, you know, like nobody should come away from this podcast thinking, oh no, I can't sing Bethel songs anymore. You know, what people should come away from it thinking is, have I even ever thought about that? And what do I think about it? And does it sit comfortably with me? Not just with that, with any of the songs that we sing. Go and look through the lyrics, look through where the church is coming from, you know, and make sure that you know the source of the things that you're really putting into the mouths of your church.
And are you singing it because it's the latest one from Elevation, or are you singing it because that's what your church needs to be singing right now?
Exactly.
You know, this is what our church needs to sing. Hey, we need to wrap it up. You guys are amazing. Tom, can we get you back again?
I could talk for another 2 hours. That's the problem. So
excellent. All right. Well, we'll break it up.
You almost took it off into another.
Sorry.
Tangents. Like,
I know there's some people listening that are like, come on, go there.
Keep going. Well, listen back again. Well, seriously, we need to get you back on to keep talking about some of this, because I think they're really important conversations. But some of the takeaways: cheer on the local voice. We're actually encouraging you to speak up, sing up, write. Yeah, listen to what the cries and the longings of the local church are in your area, the culture, all the rest of it, and let your voice be heard, yeah? Mm. Don't sing someone else's journey. Take a risk on your own song, maybe. Just give it a crack at church and, see what happens.
Well, with the permission of...
Yeah, sure, all right, okay, yeah. You might want to just run it past someone
before
you...
Hang on a sec. I did hear someone recently say something really good. She's a justice warrior in the United States, but she said something about she's in a Latino culture.
Right.
And she was expressing her very valid frustrations about a lot of this stuff, but she was saying how the songs should just be a springboard to the outpouring of worship.
Mm.
And I thought it was such a good reminder. I'm like, wow, that's another thing, that's another consequence of this industrialized worship is we've idolized worship leaders and had these celebrity worship leaders, but we've also idolized the song, the anthem, and it's all about writing the big song and the song that works. And if you're the songwriter, then you're credible. And we put so much emphasis on the song when it's the worship. It's just the springboard for our outpouring and learning again how to outpour our worship to God. And, you know, as worship leaders, we need to learn how to do that privately, but also corporately, like learning how to corporately pour out our songs. And maybe that won't land as a new spontaneous song that has a verse and a chorus or a tag or whatever. Maybe it is just the songs of the Spirit, like the Psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Like these anthems that we're singing should really create platforms for our outpouring. Yeah.
Love
that's it. So sorry, good. Guys. There's another
I was
tangent.
Trying to wrap it up and then no, I'm Nikki's so just, sorry. Just starting okay, to sorry, wind sorry. Up now. This is so good. No. There she is. Hey, Tom, if people want to follow your journey, do you want them to follow you or do you not really care? Do you want them to?
Well, you know, my dream has always been to be a celebrity worship leader.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
No, look, you can find me online on any of the socials. It's usually Tom_ Reed.
What about if someone from UK is listening to this and they want to join your collective of UK songwriters?
Yes.
How do they do that?
Well, we're in the stage right now of sort of creating this platform. So the best thing to do is to just get in touch with me personally. So you can email me at tom@tomreedmusic.com and drop me a line and just say it's something you're interested to, and I'll add you to the group because this is a kind of a community thing that we're doing together to try and launch it. So, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Nikki, are you okay if I ask Tom to pray for us to wrap this episode up? That'd be amazing. Do you mind, Tom?
Absolutely not.
Be awesome.
Great. Yeah, Father, I thank you for this conversation, and I pray that this would be an encouragement, Lord, for worship leaders to go away and to just grapple with questions, Lord, and to really almost just come back to the heart, I suppose, Lord, of why we lead worship and what it means to lead worship, Lord. And I want to pray for every ministry that we've mentioned today, Lord, that that you would just send your blessing on them, Lord, and for every worship leader that's out there in a particularly in a small church that is struggling, Lord, I pray that you would just give them the confidence, Lord, to know that they that they're doing the right thing, they're doing a good thing, Lord, and bring people around them as well to encourage them. Let the words that are spoken today encourage them as well, and help us all on this journey of leading people into your presence, Lord. And what a privilege that is, and we just want to do the best that we can, Lord. We want to really just strive to honor you with what we do in our worship, Lord. So we thank you in Jesus' name.